Okay, we're going to begin with number one of the Ten Commandments. This is over in Exodus chapter 20. The first commandment we find in verses 2 and 3. Exodus chapter 20, verses 2 and 3. And it simply says, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. Okay? This is God's claim. His claim to be the absolute sovereignty over people's lives. He is the creator. He is the God. He is the only God. And there's no need for us to go any further with these commandments that we're talking about if we don't endorse this first commandment. Okay? Because all these other commandments have no meaning whatsoever unless we give God the priority in our life. Okay? Now, we have to ask ourselves a question then today. We said we're going to make a practical application to these commandments. What is the most important thing in my life today? What do I give my priorities? Okay? And we tend to think that when we talk about idols, that we think about some image, some man-made sculpture that we would worship, and we say that's an idol. But that an idol is more than that, is it not? What is idolatry?
You could worship your job or your money.
Okay.
Or your
okay. Exactly right. It doesn't have to be a graven image, as we like to call them sometimes. It doesn't have to be something that's sculptured, okay? Anything that comes between you and God, in other words, that you give your priority to, becomes an idol to you, okay? And therefore, you would be guilty of disobeying this first commandment, okay? He said, I'm the Lord your God that brought you out of Egypt. Of course, he's talking to the Israelites at that time. And you shall have no other God before me. Not a graven image. Not anything. Now, idolatry can be our possessions. Okay, it could be our position. Well, let's go all the way back to the Garden of Eden. Okay, let's go back to where Eve was tempted back there. Of course, Adam fell into that category too, but it was Eve that was first tempted, and we said that she was tempted in three ways. Okay, what were those three ways?
Lust of the eye.
Lust of the flesh
and the pride of life.
Okay, now what does that mean? Why was it the lust of the eye? What did the devil tell her?
It looked pretty.
Yeah, look at that fruit. You know, that looks good stuff. You know, it's got to be good. So that's the lust of the eye. She saw it and lusted for it. Okay. Lust of the
flesh.
What was it?
It's going to taste good.
Okay. Yeah, it's good. It's going to do you good. Okay. And then he said, it's going to give you knowledge. You'll know just like God. Okay. And those three things, you can take any sin and you can wrap them up in one of those three categories. Okay. Now here's the idea of what we're getting at here. If we're guilty of taking God out of the priority position in our life and putting self there by committing one of these sins, lust of the eye, lust of the flesh, pride of life, then that becomes idolatry. Okay. Have you ever thought about that? So are we today guilty of idolatry? Well, you know, I'm not going to point my finger at you, but, you know, just think about it, okay? Just think about it. It's very easy. It's very easy. Anytime we take our attention away from God, whether it be in our worship or in our serving God in ministerial ways, any of those things, okay, then we're taking God off the throne and putting ourselves on there. Anytime we become selfish, then we run a risk of danger of making something else our idol. Okay, let's go over to Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6. We're going to put this over in Jesus is rewording this commandment there in this passage. Matthew chapter 6, verse 24. Someone read that for me.
Hold to the one and despise the other. We cannot serve God and mammon.
Okay. Is this what that commandment said? The first commandment? Is that not what it said? Okay. Basically, you can't serve God and man. Either God's got to be your God, or man's got to be your God, because if you take God off the throne, then, you know, God's not going to take second place. Okay. All right. Now drop down to verse 33. Okay, unto you. Okay, now that's the reason we're studying these Ten Commandments, because we said basically that there are some things concerning God that are eternal, things that were true from the time that God created man until He comes again. And just because these Ten Commandments were given on Mount Sinai and they're written in the Mosaical Law does not mean that those things are not eternal. So all of these things apply to us today. Okay. And so Jesus is rewording this first commandment for those Jews that were living in His time. He's telling them these things. So this is this eternal application of this commandment. Okay, now Paul worded it another way over in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 1 and 3. Colossians 3, verses 1 through 3. See what Paul had to say about this. Chapter 3.
If then you are raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on these things above, not on things on the earth. For you died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God.
Okay, what is Paul saying there? Who's he talking to? He's talking to Christians, okay? Now, a lot of times Paul would list this whole bunch of sins that people committed, and he would say to those Christians, that was you before, but now, okay, after they've committed themselves to Christ. So he's talking to these Christians, and what does he tell them? Now you're no longer like that. So set your mind on things above. Make God your priority, okay? So that's just a continuation of this idea of this first commandment. Okay, so let's think a little bit about this. Why is this the first commandment? Okay, see, it's first in number because it's first in priority. All right. Well, let's think a little bit about a little bit of history here. And it's hard for us to imagine some of these things because it doesn't dawn on us the amount of time that goes by and the number of people we're talking about. Okay. Now we're talking to a group of people who had been in Egyptian bondage for 435 years. Okay. Now can you imagine that? Try to grasp 435 years. How old is the United States of America? Okay. 200 and somebody. Okay. Yeah, we're not even halfway there yet. They've been in bondage for 435 years. Okay. All right. Now, do you think in that 435 years that they might have been influenced by the Egyptian society? I would imagine so. Listen, we've got 10 generations of people have been born in Egypt from the time they went in. Okay, you remember that? 10 generations. Take you over to Colossians chapter 7, about verse 25. They list some of the descendants of Ephraim. Okay, and Ephraim was a son of Joseph, who was already there, okay, but he was a grandson of Jacob, okay. And he had a bunch of sons, and they all got killed, and then it lists a new son, and then their descendants, and there are 10 of those descendants, okay. That's where we kind of get the idea of 10 generations that were there, okay. I can't even think that far back. I have to get my genealogy and go way back. That's a lot of time, okay. Now, this event took place about 3,500 years ago, okay, when they came out of Egypt. I'm talking about us today. That's how many years have passed since this transpired. It was like 1450 B.C. when all this took place. So I'm trying to get you, I'm trying to get your mind wrapped around what's going on here, okay. Now, I want you to think about this. You tell me, how did those people living during this period of time get their knowledge and their understanding about God? Okay. Strictly by the word of mouth. Okay. There was no written commandments. Okay. Who wrote the first five books of the Bible?
Moses.
Okay. That tell you something? Okay. Moses is part of this 10th generation. So up until this time, they had no written instructions telling them what to do. The traditions and these ideas were passed down supposedly from the patriarch of the family, the father, the head of the family. And he was supposed to pass those down, and they were supposed to be passed down. Now, we're talking about all these generations. Do you think maybe along the way somebody might have failed to do their job? Okay. What I'm getting at is the further away from Abraham we get, you know, it seems like the further away from God people get. Does that make sense? Okay. The idea here is that God always works His will with mankind through what we call a covenant. He's always had a covenant with His people. Okay? Back in the garden when He created Adam, He had a covenant with Adam. What was that covenant? What is a covenant? What is a covenant? It's a two-part agreement, kind of like we might call a contract. I'll do this, you do this. Okay? And you have to, both of them, or you break the covenant. Okay? So what was God's covenant with Adam? Yeah. Go out there and multiply and till the earth. Okay? And don't, there's always got to be a don't in there, doesn't it? Don't do what?
Don't
eat of that tree. Okay, that was His covenant. And as long as Adam abided by that covenant, everything was good. Okay, so we see what happened when he did not. He had a covenant with all of the different heads of the families. But let's say Abraham. Okay, he made a covenant with Abraham. What was his covenant with Abraham?
If you follow me, then I will.
Yeah, yeah. Leave Ur of the Chaldees and go to a place where I'm going to show you, and I'm going to bless you with descendants, and I'm going to give you this country in which to live, okay? And so as long as Abraham did that, and he did, okay, he made mistakes along the way, but he abided by the covenant, then those things came true. He had covenants with Jacob. He had a covenant with Noah back in the beginning. What was his covenant with Noah?
Yeah, build that ark,
you know. How long can you tread water? Yeah, build that ark, you know, and I'm gonna save you and your family, and you're going to replenish the earth. But he's always did. He had a covenant with David. He had a covenant with Solomon. He's always done that. Are we under a covenant relationship with God today? You betcha we are. What is our covenant today? The New Testament. You know, you do this, okay? You abide by this, okay? And you'll be considered righteous in my sight, and I'm going to give you a home in heaven. Okay? So that's the idea of a covenant relationship. Okay, so what I'm getting at is we went through a period about 435 years where those people were still living under the covenant that God had with Jacob. Okay? Now, Jacob went down into Egypt with his family. Anybody remember how many people went down there? I think like 70, 75. Okay, 70, 75. That 450 years, they were still under that same covenant, but the further away from Jacob they got, we're talking about 10 generations now. Can you imagine that? 10 generations away from Jacob. Don't you think living in that Egyptian culture, that they got further and further away from God? I mean, this has a point. Okay, I'm getting to it here in just a minute. You know what? Yeah. You're exactly right. You're exactly right. Well, yeah. Why is the world like it is today? Well, because we're getting further and further and further away from God. Okay, and it's getting harder and harder and harder for people to accept things, you know, the way God wanted it done. We get more and more selfish. Remember what I said, if we don't have somebody tell us what to do, what we do the selfish thing. Okay, and we don't like people telling us what to do most of the time. Okay, so that's the idea behind this. So these people have been in captivity for 435 years. They've adopted a lot of the ideas of the Egyptian culture. Okay. So it was necessary then for God to, first of all, take them over to Mount Sinai and reintroduce Himself. Okay, does that make sense? Because they really had no idea who God was. Over in Exodus chapter 3, okay, we read a story about Moses. This is where God called Moses up to the burning bush. Okay, remember that story? And now remember, Moses is part of this 10th generation. Okay, he's that far away from God. He's down there. He's fled Egypt, and he's up there in Moab. Is that where it was? He's in the desert up there. And God appears to him how? In a burning bush. Remember that conversation that Moses had with God? Recall that conversation? What did God tell him to do? Yeah, take off your shoes. You're on holy ground. Okay. Now put yourself in Moses' place. Would you have done that? Yeah. If you saw a burning bush that wasn't burning up and you heard a voice speaking to you, I think you'd take your shoes off, okay? You see, Moses realized, there's something holy, something spiritual, something beyond me here, and so he committed himself to that. Now, that comes back to us a little bit. Just put a pause here, put a comma here. Let's chase a rabbit for a minute. Okay. When God gave the Ten Commandments, the first one, what did he say? I am the Lord your God. See, he started with the fact. Okay. He didn't give them a history. He didn't tell them where he came from. Didn't tell them why he was authorized to say what he said. He just started with a basic fact. I am God. All right. Let's go even further back than that. All the way back over in the first verse of the first book of Genesis. What does it say? In the beginning, God created. Okay. Now the world says, who are you? Who is God? Why should I bow down to God, See, God just starts with a basic fact. He doesn't explain where he came from, because we couldn't understand it anyway, okay? It's not our business. He just simply starts with a basic fact that he is God and he created, okay? So we're supposed to accept that. Now, it's not that he does not give us some evidence. He doesn't give us a verbal evidence, but he puts evidence all around us. How does he do that? Okay. Open your eyes and look around you. Okay. David, what does he say? The heavens declare your handiwork. Okay. Common sense would tell you, okay, that this wasn't just some haphazard thing that happened, You didn't just throw something in the air and have it come down and working like this, In other words, he gave us a brain. He put the evidence all around us for us to see that points towards a God. But we have a responsibility of looking at those things and understanding those things. Okay, that takes us back to Moses now. We got that rabbit chased. Moses is kind of in that same condition. Okay, he has gotten away from God to the point that he's heard the stories about God. He knows, kind of like we might tell stories to fairy tales today. I don't want to compare that to a fairy tale, but we hear these stories, but we're so far away from when it happened that maybe we don't associate it very well. So God is going to reintroduce himself to Moses, all right? So he approached him there, take off your shoes, you're on holy ground, okay, and I've got a job for you. I'm going to send you back down to Egypt, and I want you to go down there and tell Pharaoh to let my people go. All right, remember Moses' question to him? He said, if I go to the people, who do I tell them, sent me? You ever thought about that? I mean, Moses said, well, who am I going to tell them sent me, Is it that he did not know? Well, I think we're getting an idea of how the people might have felt. Okay, they remember the stories, and they remember, that what was passed down, but it didn't really mean anything to them. Okay, what was God's answer to Moses? I am. I am sent me. There's a word in the Hebrew language that they use for that. It's the word Yahweh. And we don't know how you're supposed to pronounce that because we had to put vowels in there in order to pronounce it. It's basically the word is spelled YHWH and have no idea how to spell it or how to pronounce it. But in order for us to say it, we put some consonants in there and we say the word Yahweh. And that word Yahweh literally means I am. What's he trying to say? I'm it. I've always been. I always will be. It all started with me. It's all going to end with me. Okay? In other words, he's basically saying, I'm it. Okay? I'm the originator. I'm the creator. Okay? That's me. All right? So he told Moses, you go back and tell the people that I am sent me. Okay? I wrote some other New Testament passages down there. Let's see if I can find them here real quick. Well, I said I did. I don't see them right now. But anyway, what I am, okay, the word Yahweh is just it's a one word. It came to be a one word summary for the Hebrew people about God. In other words, what God is saying, he says he deserves to be enthroned in human lives because of who he is. Okay, so he's reintroducing himself to these people. Now, let me just make this statement, then I want to do a little bit of reading. The problem for every failure in the church today is because we forget this one point. Okay, and that is that God is central. You know, he is the giver of the law. He expects us to abide by that law. And when we begin to think that maybe we're smart enough that we can add to or take from or change God's law to make it better, that's when problems start. Okay? So if we're having a problem in the church, we need to go back and understand what God said about certain things. And listen, I'm not telling you that every problem has a black and white answer. It's not. Okay? Because you can bring up things that, you know, you can say, well, let me think about that. But just understand that when we start putting our opinions above God's commandments, you're going to have problems in the church. Okay? Now, here's one of the things that we forget sometimes is that a lot of the Ten Commandments were given in a negative way. Thou shalt not. Thou shalt. Why did he do that? Why did he do that? Okay. We've talked about these people maybe going away from God, so we could look at these people as maybe being infants. If you've got a little child, okay, and you're trying to train that child, you don't try to teach them the precepts behind the commandment, do you? In other words, don't do that. That's what we tell the child, right? All right. Well, why do we do it? Well, son, let me tell you now. If you don't do this, we don't do that, do we? Okay. Now we might. Yeah, and they'll learn if they do. But the idea is don't do that. And now as they grow older, we might want to teach them why we don't do certain things. But basically, when they're infants, don't do this and don't do that. Okay, and that's what God was doing with them. Now, that's one of the problems that we have with people who like to think they know more than God does, because they will ask you, well, where's the commandment that says don't dance? Where's the commandment that says don't drink socially? You see what I'm getting at? We want to think that we know more than God. There's an answer for all of those things, okay? But it's not the black and white that we're looking for, okay? And so what's happening is when people are asking those questions, okay, they're becoming kind of selfish in the fact that they're putting what they want above what God wants. Does that make sense? What I'm saying is there's that every problem goes back to the fact that we have left the Word of God, or that we think we know more than what God gave us. Okay. So just keep that in the back of your mind as we go along. All right. I want to go back to Exodus chapter 19. All right. Now, the Israelites have left Egypt. They're 3 months out on the road. They're coming down to Mount Sinai. Okay. Now, they've witnessed the 10 plagues, and every one of those plagues now was directed towards an Egyptian god. The blood, the turning the river Nile into blood was directed against, they worshiped the Nile there. Uh, the, The darkness was directed against the sun god. Death of the firstborn was directed against the Pharaoh, who they worship as an emperor-type being. The idea was that even Pharaoh himself could not stop what God was doing. So these people witnessed these things when they were there in Egypt. Then when they came out, what did they do? Crossed over the Red Sea. All right. They got thirsty, and Moses tapped the rock and gave them some water. Okay. So three months after leaving Egypt, they come to the base of Mount Sinai. Okay. Now, I don't know if you look at a map, but that's down there, not too far from the Red Sea down there. It's down there in the desert area. They haven't gone very far, but they're going to camp there for 1 year around that mountain. Around that mountain. Okay. Now I want you to start reading with me in verse 10 here. Okay. I want you to see here how God reintroduces himself to these Israelite people. The God said to Moses, "Go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow. Let them wash their garments and be ready for the third day. For on the third day, the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people, and you shall set limits for the people all around, saying, 'Take care not to go up into the mountain or to touch the edge of it. Whoever touches the mountain shall be put to death. No hand shall touch him, but he shall be stoned or shot,'" some versions say with an arrow, "whether beast or man, he shall not live. When the trumpet sounds a long blast, they shall come up to the mountain." So Moses went down from the mountain to the people and consecrated the people. They washed their garments, and he said to them, "Be ready for on the third day, and do not go near a woman." All right. What's going on here? What are these people supposed to do? And what did that mean, consecrating themselves? Okay, they're preparing themselves to meet God. Okay, they were supposed to take a bath. They're supposed to wash their clothes. They're supposed to get clean. Okay, when the priest went into the temple, what did they have to do? They had to wash themselves. Okay, there was a big laver right outside of the temple, even the tabernacle, where, they could not go in without washing themselves. Okay. This was a ceremonial thing. What was he trying to teach them? All right. Give it some thought. You're going before God. Okay. And so therefore you put on your best clothes. I'm not saying we got to wear a shirt and tie at church, but that's not what I'm saying. Okay. But I'm saying, give some thought to what you're doing. You're coming before God, and he wants you not only to dress properly, he wants you to make sure you're clean. We can say this is a ceremony or whatever, and he's more concerned about their spiritual lives than they are their physical lives, but this is a ritual that they would go through because we're going in to see God. Okay? Go before the Creator. So see, what I'm saying here is that God is reintroducing himself to these people now, and he wants them to know just how serious it is, to come into his presence. All right, and I want you to drop down to verse 16 now. Let's see if you can imagine this now. Okay, this is on the morning of the third day. There was thundering, lightning, and a thick cloud on the mountain, and a very loud trumpet blast, so that the people in the camp trembled. Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet God, and they took their stand at the foot of the mountain. Now look, Mount Sinai was wrapped in smoke because the Lord had descended on it in fire. The smoke went up like a smoke of a kiln, and the whole mountain trembled greatly. And at the sound of the trumpet grew, as the sound of the trumpet grew louder, Moses spoke and answered, and God answered him like thunder. And the Lord came down on Mount Sinai to the top of the mountain, and the Lord called Moses to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up. All right, now, picture this in your mind now. You're coming out. You're standing there at the base of Sinai, okay? And all of a sudden, God comes down. What does it look like?
Smoke and fire, and thunder, and lightning.
Yeah. Smoke, fire, the mountain is shaking, lightning coming down. How would you feel if you were there? Could you put yourself there? Yeah, I would. I would tremble too. Now, God's already told him, said, don't you touch this mountain. If you touch the mountain, you're going to die. Okay? I think maybe, you know, that I would listen to whatever's going to be said. Okay? Okay. Over to the next chapter. All right. Now, Moses is going up, and he's gotten these commandments and so forth. He comes back down now. And verse 18 of chapter 20. When the people saw the thunder and the flashings of lightning and the sound of the trumpet and the mountain smoking, the people were afraid and trembled and stood afar off and said to Moses, you speak to us and we will listen, but do not let God speak to us lest we die. Moses said to the people, do not fear God, for God has come to test you, that the fear of him may be before you, that you may not sin. These people stood afar off while Moses drew near to the thick darkness where God was. These people said, we don't want anything to do with that. You know, Moses, you go up there and you speak to God. Okay? You tell us what he said and we'll listen to you and we'll do it. Okay? So, this is the scene at Mount Sinai. God wants these people that have been isolated for 450 years to know who he is. And he does it with lightning and smoke and thunder and a shaking mountain. Okay? And so he did it in a bold way. Now the question comes to my mind. These same people that witnessed all of these things just a few months later are going to say, oh, we can't go in there and take that land. I mean, those people are giants in there. You know, we're like grasshoppers. What happened? What happened between the mountain and the edge of the going across over the Jordan into the promised land? Okay, we like to think we are, but what did they do? They took their eyes off of God and started looking at themselves. Yeah, they didn't look to God for that, okay? All they could see was what was right in front of them. Does that say anything to us? Does it tell us anything? Are we guilty of the same things today? You know, do we put God first in our lives? Does he take the priority in our lives? Okay. Every word that we speak, every decision that we make should be made with God in mind. From the time you get up out of bed in the morning to the time you go to sleep at night, you know. And God says, you'll put me first. Okay. Everything's going to be good. Okay, so when things start going bad, maybe we need to take a step back. And I'm not saying that everything bad is because we've done something wrong. Sometimes God allows us to be tested, okay? He allows us to be tested to see how we respond to those things and to make us stronger. But what I need to do is I need to take a step back and just ask myself, okay, is this something I did? You know, have I lost my focus? And it's so easy to lose our focus, isn't it? It is so easy to lose our focus. Because just look around us. We've got everybody living around us whose mind is not prioritized towards worshiping God and serving God. And so it's easy to get sucked into that. Okay. So just be careful. Okay. Now, go over to Hebrews chapter 12. This is kind of a long reading, about verse 18 through verse 29. We'll see what the Hebrew writer had to say about this same situation that we talked about here on Mount Sinai. Romans chapter 12, verse 18 through 29. Hebrews, I'm sorry, Hebrews. 12, 18 through 29.
Thank you. Jesus the mediator of the new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling that speaketh better than that of Abel. See that you refuse not him that speaketh, or if they escape not who refused him that spake on earth, much more shall. Then shook the earth, but now he hath promised, saying, ye once more, I shake not the earth only, but also heaven. And this word yet once more signifies the removing of those things that are shaken, as of the things that are made, that those things which cannot be shaken may be made. Wherefore, we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be moved. Let us have grace whereby we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. For our God is a consuming fire.
All right. Do you see what he's saying here? He makes reference back to this scene in Sinai. And he reminds them about how that mountain was, you know, smoking and lightning and thunder and shaking, you know. And he says, we don't come to that mountain today. Okay, where does he say we come today? We come to Mount Zion, okay? The city, the Jerusalem, so to speak, the city of God, okay? We say over and over again, we try to get everyone to understand that the Old Testament, okay, was a different law. The law of Moses was a different law, okay? It was a temporary law. It was given to a particular people for a time. That law has passed away. It was nailed to the cross, okay? I didn't say the Old Testament was nailed to the cross. I said that law was nailed to the cross, okay? So just remember that. We don't live by that law. That law was given to those people, those Jewish people. They weren't Jews at that time. They were Israelites at that time. On Mount Sinai, okay? It taught them morality. It taught them how to live with one another. It taught them how to respect God. But what he says here, he says, you didn't come to that mountain. You come to Mount Zion. You come to Jesus. You come to a better law, okay? He talks about God in heaven, Jesus sitting at the right hand, and how God has a community, his church, okay? And being part of that, it still doesn't change God's expectations from what it was then to what we are now, okay? God still expects the same reverence. You know, do we reverence God that way? You know, what's our attitude when we come to worship? What's our attitude before we come to worship? You know, what is our attitude while we're in worship? What about when we live our daily life from day to day, every minute? What's our attitude? Okay, do we just, you know, put our check? Oh, did my service? I went to church Sunday morning. I'm good. Okay, is that putting God first? No, it's not. Everything we do, every action we take, should be devoted to God. Now go over to 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 4. This is Paul speaking to Timothy there, and he makes an analogy that I want us to think about for a minute. This is a military thing. Verse 4. Did that talk about military people before? Yeah, was it 1 Timothy or 2 Timothy? What did I say? 2 Timothy, I'm sorry. 2 Timothy. Came that close. 2 and 4. Okay, so what's the concept there? He's making a comparison to a military soldier. What do you say the responsibility of a military soldier is?
The man who hired.
Okay, and you don't entangle yourself with the affairs of this life. You've got a soldier in the army, or whatever branch you want, anyway. Their allegiance is to who? Their country, those commanders that are over them, okay? So they don't involve themselves in running two or three businesses while they're in the army, okay, because that they don't allow that. You don't do those things. You couldn't do it anyway. You wouldn't have time to do it. And what Paul is saying there, he said, if you're in a military service, you devote yourselves to that service. Okay? What's he trying to say? Why did he say that? What's he comparing that to? He's comparing that to the church. Okay? If you are a military person in the church, if you want to look at it that way, a member of the church, where does your devotion go? It goes to God. Okay? You can't be involved in this over here and this over there and bring shame on God, because it just doesn't work. You can't serve God and mammon. Okay? So the thing we're going to have to remember is that if we can't make God the God of our lives, in other words, the ruler of our lives, and give Him first priority, He's not going to play second fiddle. Okay? And that applies to Jesus. We're talking about Jesus also. He will not take second fiddle. So He's either all or He's nothing. So we're going to have to ask ourselves some questions, you know. Every aspect of our lives has to be devoted to God. Over in Ephesians chapter 1, or chapter 6, I'm sorry, Paul talks about some family life there. We're about out of time. I'm going to run through this real quick. He says, children, obey your parents in the Lord. Okay? He says, parents, don't provoke your children to wrath. Wives, you know, love your husband. Your husbands, or wives, devote yourselves to your husbands. Husbands, love your wives. He talks to servants. You know, and he says, do whatever you're told to do. And, you know, and then he talks to the masters, and he says, be kind to your servants. He's teaching a way of life, okay? He's teaching what Christians ought to be, and that is what? Be subservient to everybody, okay? Put other people first, okay? That's just the way it is. And the reason we do that is because we serve God. God has to be the master of our lives. And if He's not first priority, just forget about all those other commandments. They don't mean anything. Okay? They don't mean anything. Well, I shouldn't say they don't mean anything. They could get you in trouble. But as far as God is concerned, you can't keep those commandments without making God the priority in your life. That would be what we call legalism. If I didn't cheat and I didn't steal and I didn't covet and I did not place God, you know, as the priority of my life, that's legalism. I'm trying to earn my way to heaven. I'm trying to say that God owes me heaven because I did all these things.
Would that be Pharisaic?
It would be Pharisaic. That's a good point. It is. Okay. So we have to make God a priority. We're out of time. We're going to have to quit. Comments? Questions? Okay. We'll move on to the second one next week. Appreciate your time.